So if you've been around for the last few weeks, you'll know that we are midway through 8 weeks of Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. I almost said who's enjoying the series, but I don't think I want to ask that question because it's actually a really tough series. And if you've been tracking with us over the last 4 weeks or so, I'm hoping it's not just me that's challenged by this and it's not just me that's actually finding stuff really challenging and at times difficult and painful in it. So I'm hoping that that's not just me. I would quite like some more friendly faces out there that look as if it's not just me, but that's okay. This week we're going to look at the topic of enlarging your soul through grief and loss. So, woohoo, it's an exhilarating week. If you were here 2 weeks ago when Alan was talking about, because we took a wee rest last week, we felt we'd done 4 weeks, we just needed a wee break to breathe again for a week. And so we're going to do another 4 weeks of it now. So we're gearing ourselves up. We're on the home straight. We can see the end. So four more weeks. But if you were here 2 weeks ago, Alan was talking about the wall. And really the stuff about grief and loss follows on from the wall. So that's where we're going this morning. I hope that what you hear in this morning is hope, that it's not all doom and gloom, that there really is hope in the midst of all of this. And actually there's something about engaging with grief and loss that actually creates hope in us and actually points to a much brighter future. So that's what we're going to look at this morning. I want to throw some stuff out to you first of all. During the worship this morning, I've been, over the summertime, I've said this to some of you before, over the summertime when I was at Clan, in terms of hearing stuff from God, he seemed to kind of up the temperature a bit when I was at Clan and started to hear very specific things. Now, that's really scary. So when you throw out a word that you say, well, I think God's saying something about, you know, that he loves you, that's a nice general word. That's okay. We can all claim those words. That's good. But it gets a wee bit more hairy when he starts giving you specific things, because then you can look really, really silly when you give specific things and everybody's looking, thinking, nope, that's not in here this morning. And so, I've really wrestled with it because I don't really like looking silly, to be perfectly honest. And I've really wrestled with it. And one of the things that I really felt in my quiet place that God was saying to me was, if you really want this, use it or lose it. And I'm like, oh God, come on. Any chance of giving me a wee break for a minute or two? And so I'm going to use it. I'm going to throw this stuff out to you this morning. You'll see what I mean when I throw it out to you, because it is really specific. Please be gentle. I'm not going to say, will you stand up if this is you, because I'm not sure I'm quite ready for nobody standing up just yet. But I'm going to throw it out. And please hear, do you know, those of us who lead here, we don't have this sorted. We don't have it sussed. We're not like up there thinking, right, we've got it. We've got this hotline. We are all in exactly the same place. And sometimes we just have to step out in faith. So I'm going to throw it to you this morning. If this makes sense to you this morning, then please come for ministry at the end. And let God speak to you some more through it. So I have three things. So for somebody, the 8th of September 1974 might be a significant date. I don't know what it is, but the 8th of September 1974 is the date. Somebody else born in 1994 who has struggled with insignificance. So what I heard was, insignificant has marked your life. Today, he says, it finishes. Find your significance here this morning. So that's the second one. And the third one, I mean, it's like, I'm standing over there this morning saying, seriously, God, do you really want me to say that? So here's the third one. Somebody who has had a dog called Benji who was put to sleep in the last year. So let me throw that out to you. And if that's yours, come for ministry. The other thing that I've discovered as I've kind of stepped out with this is that sometimes it's not somebody in the room. Sometimes people hear it and then they go away, and through the week, all of a sudden, somebody pops up in front of them and that's in the conversation, and something tracks back to whatever was thrown out earlier on in the week. So if it's not you, just hold it. If something's sat with you, if something's landed with you, hold on to it. And if you stumble over somebody during the week, actually God's given you a wee nudge to say, that's who it is, that's who that is. So I throw it out to you and we'll see what happens. So let's do enlarging my soul through grief and loss, and let's have a look at this. We're going to start in Scripture. We're starting in Matthew, and we're in chapter 26 at verse 31. And I've managed to leave my Bible lying in the living room this morning, so I'm going to have to try and read the very small print off the page. Matthew 26, verse 31 to 44. Then Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." "Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "this very night before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to the disciples and he found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it's not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." When he came back, he found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed a third time, saying the same thing. The story of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane is probably one of the stories in the New Testament where we really see somebody engaged with what it feels like to grieve, what it feels like to be sorrowful. And Jesus doesn't shy away from that. He doesn't shy away from telling the disciples how he was feeling, from telling his friends. He doesn't shy away from asking for help. He doesn't shy away from expressing what's there. And I think part of the issue for us in our culture is that in the culture that we live in, grief and loss are often taboo subjects. We don't actually talk about them very much. It's interesting talking with some people who don't necessarily come from the West of Scotland culture. So Cathy and I have talked about this on and off for ages, about the way that the death and loss is dealt with in the islands is very different to it's dealt with in the West of Scotland or in Central Scotland or even in the rest of Scotland. And we protect our children from it, don't we, here? You know, so we don't talk about it, and we do the stiff upper lip thing, and we try not to cry, and we try to push through it and to see something beyond it and all the rest of it. Now, none of those things are necessarily wrong, but we don't really engage with it often. We're often awkward around people who are engaging with grief and loss. If you see some of the other cultures, not even the culture of Scotland in terms of the islands, but if you look abroad to cultures, to some of the African cultures, and you see what happens when there's a death there, and the overwhelming expressions of grief and the very outward signs and shows of grief and that's there in terms of response to a loss. And we don't have that in our culture. And so that makes working with grief and loss something that's actually quite difficult. And the thing is that death and grief and loss and death isn't actually just about somebody physically dying. The thing is that we all encounter many deaths in the course of our lives. So if you think about even your life to date, there'll be lots and lots of places where there's been a death or there's been a loss in your life, not necessarily with somebody physically dying. Something happens which shouldn't have happened. Something doesn't happen which should have happened. Disappointment, betrayal, redundancy, retirement, separation, the empty nest. You could go on and on and on and on and on. There are multiple losses, multiple deaths that we suffer over the course of our life. The thing about a loss is that it's final. The thing about a loss is it's final, the door's closed, and it's not coming back. That's the difference between something that's about transition and something that is actually about a death or a loss. Death is final. It's not been undone. And it's the same for the losses in our life. Those losses are final. Whatever it was, whatever it is that is no longer there isn't coming back in general with a loss, with a death that we're actually facing in terms of life. And there are many ways that we develop to deal with grief and loss, aren't there? And I think they actually might all just come up in the one go. There's a big list of them up there. These are some of the ways that we deal with death, whether it's an individual death, an actual physical death, or whether it's the death of something that was very dear to us, whether it's a relationship or a dream or whatever it is. So sometimes denial is the way we go. So we refuse to accept that it's actually happened. Nope, it's not happened. It's not. No, it's absolutely not. And we carry on the way we always did, denying that anything has changed. Sometimes we minimise the loss. So sometimes we minimise it, making it out to be less serious or to have less impact. Okay, it didn't really matter anyway. Okay, it's okay because I've still got it. So it's all right. We minimise it. We gloss over the top of it sometimes. Sometimes we blame. So if somebody else had just done, if this had happened, if that had happened, and we blame something that's external to ourselves. So sometimes we blame. I don't know if you've done this one. Sometimes we over-spiritualize it. You know, God works together for all things together for good for those who love him. God's got a plan and a purpose in this. You know, God knows what he's doing. God has got some other better plan for me. We over-spiritualize the whole thing. Or we go the other way and we say, this was the enemy. The enemy did this. The enemy, and we need to cast him out. We need to bind him. We need to silence him. We need to deliver ourselves from whatever. And so we go on an over-spiritualizing thing. Now, please hear me. I'm not saying that any of these things are necessarily wrong. They're just ways that we deal with our own grief and with our own loss. Sometimes we blame ourselves. I was just too soft. I just didn't say what I needed. I just didn't do it at the right time. If I had just the shoulds and the oughts that come in. So sometimes we turn it, rather than blaming somebody else, we blame ourselves. Sometimes we rationalise it. Well, do you know, it wouldn't have been good for me anyway. It wouldn't have been good for me anyway. And in actual fact, then the spiritualising might come in. It wouldn't have been good for me anyway. And you know, God knows better than I do. And so we flip from one into the other. Sometimes we intellectualize it. Well, do you know, if you look at the great scheme of things, and then we go on to explain why it shouldn't be the way we actually wanted it to be. Sometimes we distract ourselves. So sometimes we throw ourselves into other things and we try to forget the thing it is that was really causing us pain, the thing it is that we're actually grieving over. So we get ourselves distracted onto something else, onto another cause or another thing that takes our mind off whatever it is that's hurting. Sometimes we become hostile. So sometimes we get angry with people. And sometimes we don't really know why we're getting angry with them, but there's a bit of a release for that for us. But everybody else is left a bit confused round about us because we've suddenly changed how we behave with them. And sometimes we medicate. We can medicate in lots of different ways. We can medicate with substances. We can medicate with alcohol. We can medicate with drugs. We can medicate with television or with Facebook. We can medicate with pornography. We can medicate with unhealthy relationships. We can medicate in lots and lots and lots of different ways. We can even medicate with sleep and take to our bed and sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep and refuse to engage with people. We medicate in lots of different ways. We can medicate because we overeat. We can medicate because we undereat. There's lots and lots of different ways, but whatever it does, it starts to make us feel a bit better. It starts to make us feel as if whatever it was that was sore, we've somehow managed to subdue a bit. Somehow it's not bothering us quite so much because we've done one of these things that's taken our mind off it. It's really interesting when you look at this passage and you look at how the different people reacted in the face of death, of the face of an impending death, the face of the fact that they were going to lose their friend. We look at how Jesus reacted to the fact that he was about to do something that he knew was coming, but he didn't want to do that. That you read that in Gethsemane, that's what he was wrestling with God. Seriously, really, is there not any other way of doing this? So faced with death and denial, look at what Peter does. Peter becomes hostile about it, and he's in denial. Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. You can hear Peter, can't you? Peter's the one that gets the hothead, the one that gets the reputation of just absolutely saying it like it is. And I'm sure when Peter said this, he wasn't saying it in a nice, calm and quiet and gentle way. He was facing Jesus and saying, "Don't you say that. That is not true. I'm not going there with you." So Peter becomes hostile in the face of something that is painful for him to think about. But look what Jesus does in verse 38. Jesus called it what it was. He says to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." Jesus doesn't gloss over it. He doesn't deny what he feels. He doesn't say, "Well, you know, it's all working together for good." He doesn't over-spiritualize it. Jesus simply sits with what he feels and articulates that to his friends. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." And then if you look at what he does with his friends, he asks for what he needs. He didn't pretend it was okay. He asked his disciples, he asked his friends for what he needed. He needed them to be there with him. He needed them to stay with him. And that's what he asked them for. He went back into the garden and back into the pain of death and loss and what he knew was also betrayal. And look what they did. They went to sleep. Was it too hard in that moment with Jesus? Was that sleep actually a form of self-medication? You know, because this was actually too painful. We're just not going to go there. Let's not do that. It's late. We'll just nod off for an hour so we don't have to engage with his stuff. Jesus deals with it quite differently to his friends deal with it. When you trail through scripture, you can see that some of the heroes of our faith deal with loss, they deal with their emotion, they deal with those difficult things that they feel in quite a different way to the way that we do. So you read through the Psalms and you read what David writes in the Psalms and how David pours out how he's feeling in the Psalms. And he's not afraid to do it. He's not afraid to tell you that his soul is overwhelmed. He's not afraid to tell you that he feels really bad about himself. He's not afraid to actually call it what it is and sit with what it is and feel it. Sometimes the scariest place to be is actually with yourself in order to feel what it is that's deep down inside you. I wonder if there's a challenge for us to see loss and grief and death in a different way. What if, rather than being an interruption in our lives, all the deaths we suffer were seen as opportunities to experience transformation? What if we saw death like that and loss and grief like that, that they were opportunities for us to experience transformation, for us to emerge like a butterfly from the chrysalis, for us to emerge as somebody new, with new relationships with other people, with ourselves and with God, beyond whatever it was that we were struggling with? As I said already, in our culture, we don't really do grief and loss very well at all. This is a quote from the book. "Feeling sad, depressed, or anxious about the future has got to be due to my unbelief. This is not God. It must be related to my sins. I just figured out it was better if I stay away from church and Christians while I got over it." I wonder if you, like me, sometimes have felt pain over something and actually thought that it was something to do with your sin. And in actual fact, you couldn't let that out because everybody would see that you just weren't sorted out at all. And so the best thing to do was just to avoid anybody for a while until you got over it in some way, shape, or form. The thing when we look at the Garden of Gethsemane is that Jesus didn't do that. Jesus could have left everybody and gone to the Garden of Gethsemane and not taken anybody with him. He could have done that, but he didn't. He actually chose to let people in. He didn't run away with what he was feeling. He actually stayed and invited people to walk it through with him. What they did was something quite different. What if we're missing out on resurrection because we find it so hard to sit with the pain of something or someone dying? Resurrection is one of these things that's pivotal, or perhaps the thing that's pivotal to our faith. Yep. That's where we're looking. So when we come for communion and we remember what Jesus did for us, we remember that Jesus died, we know the next chapter, we know the end of the story. We know that it didn't just stop there. We know that resurrection came 3 days later. And we know that it didn't just all end with Jesus dying. But that's the thing about resurrection. You can only have resurrection if you've had a death first. You can't get resurrection without the death. You can't get resurrection without the death and the grief and the loss of giving up whatever it was that wasn't that has died or that is no longer there. One of the things that we've been encouraging one another to do throughout this series is sit with some of the things that are really uncomfortable, some of the feelings and the emotions, some of the thoughts, some of the behaviours even, that are actually really uncomfortable for us. It's okay sometimes to sit with the happy feelings. It's all right to be happy and joyful and ecstatic and excited and all those positive emotions. They're good ones. We quite like to have those ones and we don't mind sitting with them for as long as possible. But actually, sometimes it's really difficult to sit with the hard ones. Sometimes it's really difficult to sit with the ones that make us feel uncomfortable. Sometimes it's hard to sit with disbelief. Sometimes it's hard to sit with disappointment and with anguish and with pain and with betrayal and with loss. Sometimes it's really difficult to sit with all of those ones. The encouragement for all of us in the series we're looking at just now is to actually get to a place where we're able to do that. Not because we want to wallow in it, but actually because there's resurrection on the other side of it. So we don't sit in our faith, we don't sit with Good Friday all the time. We don't sit, absolutely it's important, absolutely it's pivotal, absolutely it's at the center point of what we believe about Jesus and about our faith. But actually we don't stay there. We move from Good Friday and we move to the resurrection, we move to Easter Sunday, and it's like that for us as well. One of the things about this stuff, the difficult feelings that are often to do with grief and loss, that are often to do at the point where we're sitting at a wall with the dark night of the soul that we talked about 2 weeks ago, one of the things is that when we don't actually deal with the stuff that's there in us at that point, if we don't deal with it with God or with somebody else, then eventually it'll leak all over everybody else. Because you can only keep it down for so long. You can only bury that disappointment and that whatever and whatever and whatever for so long. And then it leaks out all over everybody else. And sometimes it leaks out because somebody has a poke and pokes at you, and all of a sudden you react in a particular way that is not to do with whatever it is that's going on there. It's to do with whatever it was that was inside you that you didn't deal with in the first place. I want to just touch on this morning. I want to touch on the problem of projection and transference, because this is actually a real issue. It's a real issue round about churches. It's a real issue round about relationships. It is just a real issue. And projection and transference happens when we've got stuff inside of us that we don't recognise is there, that we haven't dealt with, and it suddenly comes out at the wrong person, or it suddenly is dumped on the wrong person. So one of the things that happens with projection and transference is that I'm with you and you remind me of something. Now, I'm not even very sure what you remind me of, but just subconsciously there's something that you do or something that you say, or even just because of who you are, reminds me of something that actually was very uncomfortable for me, something from the past a long time ago. Reminds me of something that's uncomfortable, and then before I know where I am, I'm all of a sudden, you're the worst thing since sliced bread. No, that was the best thing, wasn't it? You're the worst thing in the world. And all of a sudden, you're this and you're that and you're the next thing and you're and all the rest of it. And actually, it's not yours, it's mine. Very often it happens in churches as far as leaders are concerned. And I've kind of wrestled with whether I was going to do this or say this morning as well. And I was saying to Alan, this is where I thought I might go this morning. Do you know, see folks in leadership in churches, in particular people in senior leadership in churches, they are prone to getting everybody's mother and father wounds dumped on them. So all of a sudden, you know, we do something or we say something and you go off on one somewhere. And please hear me, I'm not saying you all do. I'm not saying that. And I've done it myself. So, you know, somebody goes off on one and all of a sudden all this tirade comes at us about something. And to be honest with you, personally, let's not do we. Personally, I'm standing there going, what? Is it really? Seriously? And I, until I got a handle on what projection and transference was, I used to just think there must be something really wrong with me, that I was really bad, and that actually I had some ulterior motive that was coming out in terms of the way I was behaving with other people. And then I suddenly realised it was actually about projection and transference, because it's not about what I've done, it's actually who I remind you of. Or something that I've done that reminds you of something that's unresolved from a long time ago, that you were never able to say it to the person who you really needed to say it to. And all of a sudden, there's somebody, there's a sitting duck, and all of a sudden, they get it. Now, we do that all the time. That's unfair. We don't do it all the time. We do it some of the time. I do it, you do it. But something that we really need to be aware of, if we actually want to crack this emotionally healthy stuff and crack this culture of healthy church, if we really want to do it, we actually have to be aware of the stuff that's inside of us. We have to be aware of the way that we medicate the pain that's inside of us. We have to be aware of the way that we shove the stuff down so that we're at least aware of it. When it comes up, we recognise, wait a minute, that's actually not yours. That belongs to somebody else. I wonder where that came from. One of the things that I read maybe about 18 months ago now, or I'd listened to somebody talk about it, and they were saying that what you need to do when you react to something, when you have a big reaction, I can't describe it in any other way, I hope you know what that means. You know when you have a big reaction to something and you're just ready to kill somebody, or you're just ready to launch forth at somebody? To act, rather than launching forth and sending that email or verbalising it or whatever, one of the really interesting questions is to say, gosh, I noticed that I am now feeling, that's really interesting. I wonder where that came from. And it's been interesting over the last 18 months as I've started to do that. I don't get it right all the time, and my apologies if you've been on the receiving end of it. I don't get it right all the time, but I started to do that. And one of the things that it does is it slows your reaction down long enough to work out what's really going on the inside of you. And then sometimes you actually have to sit with the real discomfort of, man, that would be dead easy to just dump that all over them, but that's not their stuff, that's actually my stuff. Why do I feel like that? What is that about? And then you start to sit with it, and that's a really uncomfortable place to be, but when you sit with it, you can actually work it through, you can experience it, and then you can tell somebody about it, or you can tell God about it. And almost you've processed, you've been able to actually let the stuff up, and then it doesn't leak out all over everybody else. I want to finish with two things. I want to finish with a what this is not and then a what this is. This whole idea of enlarging your soul through grief and loss, the whole idea of engaging with grief and loss, it is not a suggestion that we stay stuck and don't move on. It's not a suggestion that we simply wallow in whatever loss or grief or whatever it is that's there, because we can do that. Well, I can do that. I can throw a big pity party for myself and I can sit there for quite some time enjoying the fact that life, the woe is me, the Eeyore stuff. I can do that. And I'm sure there have been times when you've been able to do that too. It's not a suggestion to stay stuck and don't move on. It's not a suggestion that we need to make more of our losses than we need to. So it's not a suggestion that unless we've got a big loss or we're able to articulate that things are really bad for us, that we've somehow missed out. It's not that at all. If you are not bothered by at the moment or engaging with or dealing with or having to face any losses or any deaths at the moment, then bless you. Absolutely enjoy. They do come up from time to time and we do have to engage with them, but we don't have to stay somewhere where we don't need to be. It's also not a suggestion that we focus on telling everybody how bad we feel, because there are things called boundaries that are very helpful. Sometimes it's not appropriate to share stuff with other people, and sometimes it is. Sometimes it's appropriate to share it with one or two people, but not this one or two people. Maybe it's this one or two people. So I want to encourage you to work out where your boundaries are in all of that and what that looks like as well. And I want to finish with what this absolutely is. This absolutely is an encouragement to lean into our losses with God and to allow him to transform us through resurrection. The same power that raised Christ from the dead is the same one that lives in me. And if that power was able to raise Christ from the dead, then it can bring resurrection, or he can bring resurrection through any loss, through any suffering, through any whatever that there is in my life. It's also an invitation not to shy away from difficult stuff with those in our community. Sometimes when people are hurting in our community, sometimes when people are facing things that we don't have answers to, sometimes when people are facing things that challenge not only their belief and their worldview, but they challenge ours as well, it's really easy to walk the other way. It's easy to shut it down. It's easier because it's less painful for us to do that. Because as we sit with somebody who's dealing with some of this raw stuff, we cannot fail to be impacted by it ourselves. And what often happens is that our unresolved material starts to churn around in there somewhere as we sit with them. And that's very uncomfortable. We can choose to do one or two things at that point. We can run or we can stay. I want to encourage you that the healthy thing to do is to stay. Yeah. Sometimes we simply need to learn how to weep with those who weep. And that's the encouragement for us as a community. It's an opportunity for us to be able to learn how to weep with those who weep, but not just to stay in the weeping, to help people to see the resurrection that's beyond the mourning, that's beyond the death. One of the things as a community that we want to be able to do is to be real with one another. Yeah. And sometimes in being real with one another, we actually have to be vulnerable. Sometimes, and some of you will know this because I've sat with you, sometimes when I'm sitting with people and when we're chatting about whatever it is we're chatting about, sometimes I've gone to somebody in their vulnerability and sat with them, and they've invited that. And they feel very vulnerable in the midst of that. But actually what happens in the conversation is that it's me that becomes very vulnerable in it, because actually it's me that cries. And I remember ages ago sitting with somebody and them saying to me, gosh, I have cried and cried and cried and cried about this, and I'm not crying this morning. But I was sitting in absolute floods of tears. And I'm saying, it's all right, I'll cry your tears for you just now. That's not a problem, I'll cry them. And you can just tell me what's going on. But that's a really vulnerable place for us to be. I want to encourage you to engage with that vulnerability, because it's in that vulnerable place of feeling the stuff and engaging with it that there is the potential to see the resurrection on the other side. If Jesus hadn't gone to the cross, there wouldn't be a resurrection. If it hadn't hurt, there wouldn't be the joy of Easter morning. And I want to encourage you that there is resurrection beyond wherever you are at the moment. We want to offer a space to be able to pray this morning for you. The ministry team are going to come up and we'll pray. If there's stuff that's rumbling around for you and you would like us to pray, then we'd love to do that. Perhaps it's not actually appropriate for you to come for prayer this morning. Perhaps that actually just feels like a step too far, or actually this is a bit of an exposed place to do that. We released a whole pile of inner healing appointments over the next 2 months. We released them last week. They went out to our waiting list. There are still some of those appointments left in October and in November. There is a Saturday in October that we're just doing a whole blitz of appointments. So we're doing 8 appointments on one Saturday. If you're sitting there thinking this morning, do you know, I've been running from this for long enough. I actually want to engage with this. Let's just deal with that. Let's get to the resurrection on the other side. If that's you this morning, there are forms at the back there that you can fill in, and we'll sort you out with the first appointment that we can sort you out with. There are opportunities in this place to be able to deal with whatever it is that we need to deal with. I'm going to pray just now. I'm going to ask the guys in the band if they'll come up and just lead us in one song at the end. So let me pray. Father, we thank you for Jesus. We thank you that he's our role model for how you do this stuff. Jesus, I thank you that you didn't shy away from feeling what you felt, that it wasn't sanitized, that it wasn't dressed up or dressed down. It was just what it was. Jesus, will you help all of us to work out what that looks like in our lives? Jesus, will you help us to understand what it is to sit with the pain of whatever the loss is in order to get to the resurrection on the other side? Jesus, thank you for that carrot, if you like, to be able to deal with stuff. Thank you for that encouragement that that's there, that actually when we push through, there really is resurrection on the other side. God, I thank you that there's gift in everything for us. Will you help us, those of us who are grappling with loss just now, Father, will you help us to see the gift that there is in that for us? Will you help us to see what it is you're holding out to us, that you're offering us, that will bring transformation, not just to us, but to all the people around about us too. Father, we thank you for your gentleness. We thank you for your kindness. And we thank you for the hope and the power that is in Jesus. Amen.